us. We think that being obese is healthy, and it's not. It's fucking horrible for us. Realistically, it's more expensive than most other fucking lifestyles. Done the city life, owned multiple homes, sold, you know, $1 million worth of homes, and 2 years ago, no, almost 3 years ago now, I was, through COVID, I was just like, I'm fucking done with this. I can't. You have to take the onus for your choices, you know? And so many women aren't willing to fucking do that. Have never even left their fucking hometown, their home city. I sacrificed everything to get to the place that I am.
And before we jump into the official episode today at Fearless Well, I just want to point out this is hashtag Team No Delusions. So everything you'll see, intro, mid-tro, intro, recording, everything is raw footage, one take. I will not be doing or redoing or participating in the whole Hollywood thing where everything needs to look polished or fake or perfect, because that's just not real life. So with that being said, welcome into the real world, and now we're jumping into the episode. Welcome everyone. We're back with Fearless Well Podcast, and today we have a long-awaited guest. There's been several times planning me disappearing from the internet world, moving cross states, etc., etc. Probably one of my, by far, one of my favorite people online. We have Carly with us. Hi, Carly.
Hi, Bera.
So what I want to, like, okay, for those who don't know you, let me sketch like an outside perspective. You are a, first of all, gorgeous lady who has chosen rural life while not letting go of abundance, but perhaps a different, but you have like embraced
different kind of abundance.
Yes. And while also speaking on very, you know, modern internet problems such as feminism, our bodily autonomy, our vaginas, the health of our bodies, and a lot of bandwagons that happen online, right? So we have like veganism, everyone's anti-meat, everyone's anti-men, everyone is like, embrace your victim, and you're like, no.
Yes.
And which has been a theme for me, so I'm kind of like stuck on that. I'm marketing myself right now as redneck rich, right? Like I've done the red bottoms, I have 20 pairs. I've done the traveling the world, and now I'm back on a homestead, 65 acres, and all I can think about, like, oh my God, this is so good.
So good, and realistically, it's more expensive than most other fucking lifestyles that people think it's... You know, the homesteading lifestyle, ranching lifestyle has been glamorized online these days, and it's fucking stupid. People don't realize the money that it takes to make this work, and yes, the fucking work ethic it takes to make this work.
And I love how the, like, the anti-capitalist people are like, I just want to live on a farm and homestead my life. I'm like, do you have fucking homestead money?
Exactly. Which most of them don't.
Exactly. So tell me how you ended up here. What kind of the trajectory of your life was, or like the cycles? Because I know you've done the partying, the being wild, and like, you know, city life, by lack of better wording. So
well, I was raised on a farm in Saskatchewan. So, you know, farm life is what I know. And I've done the city life, owned multiple homes, sold, you know, $1 million worth of homes, and 2 years ago, no, almost 3 years ago now, I was, through COVID, I was just like, I'm fucking done with this. I can't do city life anymore. I'm sick of humans. And I've been a Rolfer for, well, a manual therapist for 18 years, Rolfer for 10 years. And I was like, I'm just done with humans. I don't want to have a practice with humans anymore. I was like, I'm going to go to school and do my equine Rolfing training, essentially. And I couldn't go because I wasn't vaccinated, so I couldn't leave Canada. And that just set me on a path of looking for the right teacher. And I was living in Calgary, and I sold my house, and I bought a 1980 fucking trailer, and moved to BC, and was living at a campground in a trailer for a year, through a Canadian winter, without a fucking furnace, and I was like, this is just what has to happen. And it was... You know, I'm sure my family, my dad thought I was batshit crazy. When I was living in Saskatoon, I had a brand new beautiful house. I had a rental property. My practice was highly successful. I was booking out months and months in advance. I was making the most money I'd ever made in my life at that point. But I was fucking miserable. And then I thought, oh, a different city, that'll be the ticket. And that wasn't the ticket. So I move into this camper, and one night I'm scrolling on Instagram, and this woman, pops up, and, she does horse medicine work, and it was just instant, and she was only 2.5 hours from where I was living in BC, and I was like, instantly, I was like, this is it. This is the person that I've been fucking waiting for. So I went on her website immediately, saw that she had some retreats coming up, and booked one. And as soon as I met her, my heart was just like, fuck. this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I could just see the level of money, the level of commitment, the level of responsibility that this woman holds, that I was like, ah, fuck. Why? Why this? You know? Because it's daunting. There's no fucking doubt about it. It's a lot. But I know that when I get that ah fuck sensation, that I can't say no to it. So I started mentoring with her, and everything just fucking appears. My first horse. I had a horse growing up, but I haven't had a horse since I was 18 years old. So it's been 18 years since having horses. And I met Hillary, my mentor in the horse therapy, in May, and in October I was hosting my own retreat at her space, combining pelvic health and the horse medicine work. And I got this message on Instagram from a woman who follows me, and she's like, Carly, I have this horse, I think you're meant to have her. And I was like, ah, fuck, again, you know? I wasn't looking for a horse actively at that time, because I was just renting a spot on this woman's property. I'd moved out of my shitty little camper into a tiny home that I designed. But, you know, I didn't have land. I didn't have space for this horse, nothing. And as soon as I saw her, I was just like, yeah, I have to. I can't say no. So my partner and I drove out to fucking Alberta, 12-hour drive, to pick this horse up. And she's just changed my life, everything. And it's been this continual process of having to say yes no matter what, because I truly believe the life that I'm living it's nothing that I could have conceptualized for myself. It's soul contract work that I just have to say yes to, and I have to make a lot of fucking money to make this work and make it happen the way that it's supposed to.
Oh, so good. So many questions. So if you see me like go out of the screens because I'm writing things down to cycle back. Do you know who Alex Hormozi is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. One point that he always hammers on is that, you know, in our sharing of our myths and legends, you know, we share this little fraction where it's like, you know, I was in the winter of Canada, I'm in my trailer, there's snow here, like, and it's such a blip in the story verbally, right? But could you take us for a second perhaps to how did you feel, and how were you in that moment? Like, were you all like, hey, this is going to be fine? Did you have frustrating moments? Did you have moments like, holy shit, like, what am I doing?
Totally. Totally. I had this beautiful little house in Calgary. It was my favorite home I've ever owned. I lived in a beautiful part of Calgary. My practice in Calgary was booming. Again, I was making the most money I'd ever made. And, Yeah, I was living in a 26-foot 1980s trailer that was not built for fucking Canadian winters with two large dogs and no fucking furnace. I just had two little plug-in heaters that kept us warm throughout the winter, and it was fucking painful. And I was like, what am I doing? And I went from my whole business up until COVID was in-person, hands-on manual therapy. That's all I've ever done. And then COVID forced me to go online with my work, which has been the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. For sure. It's really changed the game for me. But I really had to let major parts of myself die to get through that winter. And in that winter, I met my partner, who we are building this life together. And it's a real humbling thing to meet someone and be like, yeah, I live in a fucking campground in a 1980s trailer. I have nothing to my name. He couldn't even fit in my shower. If he wanted to come and spend the night, he couldn't shower because it was so tiny. It was very challenging, very fucking challenging. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things of what I've been through in my life, was that winter the hardest thing I've ever been through? Absolutely not. No.
No, sure. And I think, at least from my perspective, what I really love and appreciate about you is obviously that I recognize a lot in you from myself, which is kind of like anti-country daddy, right? Where they're spewing this like, oh, listen, little babies, you need to do this. And we're like, well, fuck you. Where are your receipts to make us listen to you? I don't see you having my best intention. But also where you're having seen you go viral several times, having witnessed you go through several virtual attacks, and I'm assuming even like verbal and in-person ones too, where you're putting your heels down and saying like, no, I disagree with this, bandwagon, this premise that's being like shoved down everyone's throat, whether it's, the endlessly soft parenting and like, oh, any discipline or punishment or consequences are bad, right? We need to soft cuddle everyone. And you're like, well, this is not real life. Like, and you recently went through a, and I'm gonna cycle back to that. The reason why I wanted to kind of zoom in on that, like your winter in the trailer, is because we do in our sharing story, right? We have limited time. So we kind of like throw some things out there, all like, yeah, lived in a trailer, went through this, and that's it. But for people who are listening or who are going through it can feel like, well, these people make it sound so easy, not intentionally, right? But because it's just a
Yeah,
short part of the story.
totally.
And you recently had a horrible experience where your house was on fire.
Yes.
You lost everything in a fire, and one of the you shared your story semi real time, I'm using air quotes here, online to give what I felt like to give people an insight on what's going on, the realness of life. And after you shared like, well, I don't have time to fucking break down. Like, no one's benefiting from me having a mental breakdown, while everyone's like, oh my God, I would have broken down, and oh my God, I would have lost it. And I'm having goosebumps right now because I remember that post. I've saved that post where you were like, well, no one's benefiting. Like, I have animals, I have a husband, I have XYZ. So can you say anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, it also ties into the, choosing to live in the trailer. It's being able to stay calm and grounded in the choices that we make in life. Like, obviously didn't choose for my house to break down, but shit fucking happens. And the way we are able to handle adversity is just an absolute indication of someone's capacity of their nervous system, And because so many people have been just coddled through life, have not experienced any fucking adversity, they crumble in the face of anything. And like, I consciously chose to live in that trailer and go through a winter like that because making sacrifices are necessary to get to the places that we want to go in life. 100%, right? And the amount of people that want to make sacrifices and put themselves in places of discomfort is just, it's minimal. And that's why we see the world in the condition that it is. It's just a, like, North America is fucking Disneyland full of children that just want to play and have their fucking cake and ice cream and not do anything that challenges them. And the in the perspective of my house burning down, did it suck? Was it stressful? Absolutely. But was I hurt? Were my aunt, did I lose any animals? No. Was my husband, my partner hurt? No, we're not married yet, so I don't call him my husband yet, but we're getting there. And that's just, like, putting everything into perspective. I think this is a skill that a lot of people have lost, and it's, like, it's material shit. And one thing that I so deeply appreciate about myself is I fucking love making money. It's like, yeah, I lost a lot of shit, and it's been super expensive, and it's just money. I've wasted so much money in my life. And I'm going to make more, and I'm going to make more, and it's endless, right?
Yeah, and the point, the Disneyland analogy is so on point, where we have created a culture, and I have to be cautious with myself, because I tend to, this is the thing, I don't know any rural weak people. This is such a fucking city problem. This is such a city problem. The all 100%. The, you know, consent, sensuality, Me Too movement, while they all originated and started from a perhaps good idea, the push that corporations and country daddies used it for to push a narrative, you know, the anti-men. We all have these fucking weak men. I don't know any rural weak men. I don't know any. All the men. And I live in a town, 285 population. We have no cell service, 30 minutes either direction, nearest city, and I'm using air quotes because it's like 100,000 people, it's like two hours drive away, right? Including hospital, any, you know, animated resources or whatever, doesn't matter. I don't know any weak men here. Like, there's no weak men here. So it's such a city coddle problem, to a point where we have created a culture where adversity is someone having a different opinion.
Yes.
Or even just challenging your opinion. Like, that's, like, what a luxury problem. And coming from East Europe right now, like, oh, it's such a thing.
That's the thing. Like, most people in, you know, our current climate have never even left their fucking hometown, their home city. Because I do know people in small town fucking Canada who are absolutely coddled princesses and can't handle fucking anything, for sure. and, you know, it's an issue when we live in such a secluded, like, worldview. We have no idea what real hard fucking life is. And when I was 24, I moved to Kenya, when I was 24, and I was a fucking spoiled brat before then. I was a drug addict, I was a princess, like, I worked hard, you know, I grew up on the farm, could fucking, you know, do that life, but I was a total fucking princess, too, and very entitled, and a very selfish fucking person, and going to Africa changed everything for me, absolutely changed my whole worldview. And really showed me what hard fucking life is. Like, do we go through traumatic things here in North America? Absolutely. Of course we do. People experience trauma. Does it hold a candle to what happens in the real world? No, it fucking doesn't. And our, again, our current climate of the victim Olympics and everyone's trauma is just so fucking important and so fucking, theirs is so much worse than the next person's is, it's really disgusting, and it's part of, like, this de-evolution of humanity that's happening here.
Have you at any point been part of the feminism bandwagon?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
right.
Hardcore. Okay. Hardcore. Yeah.
Okay.
Hate
okay
men. Yeah.
Hate men, they were the reason of everything, right? If any suffering is all. And it's funny how I feel like feminism was the baseline of the rest of the victim Olympics, how everything is now white supremacy, right? Like, totally. Everything. And so two things about that. So Africa first. how do you feel now in, you know, because if you as a white cis woman, and I hate that term, I will not use that term, and I'm using this now sarcastically, you as a white woman going to Africa, you're participating in, you know, white saviorism.
Yeah, right. All that.
So tell me.
So I had no idea about what white saviorism was before I went to Africa. Wasn't even a concept that, you know, was I knew about. It wasn't until a couple years after living in Africa that this really became popular, and I went through, like, I was frozen in my white womanhood for years. I was just a bad white girl who didn't deserve anything good and had to just shut the fuck up and sit down and not expand my business, not speak out online, especially if something traumatic happened and, you know, how the online world goes. And I lived in that state for years and years and years. And it's a bunch of fucking bullshit. It's like, if any group of people needs another person to shut the fuck up and sit down so that they can use their voice and feel their power and express themselves, it's false. Period. That's really as simple as it needs to be.
Yeah, it's funny for me because I fall, as an immigrant, as a non-Western person, I fall out of the spectrum. I've participated in the spectrum 100%, right? But the, like, any non-Mayo people, as I refer to them, like, funnily now, they never come for me, and they can't come for me, right? Because just by virtue of where I come from, like, American poverty is still a walk in the park compared to the rest of the world. So they can't virtue that at me, right? Like, you, yeah. the white person. Like, so it's funny observing how I participated in any, you know, feminism, white, you know, the racism stuff, as a non-Western person. Mm-hmm. And seeing it evolve from, which I feel like it, again, just like feminism itself, it started from a very important notion, like, hey, we want a bank account, right? And then it moved into this, like, beast, absolute monster that became anti-white people, anti-men, etc. It became into these extremes. How did you get into feminism? Or that
through the birth world, really, was the biggest initiation into it. The birth world, the doula world and the birth world is full of extremely toxic women who are deeply perpetuating this idea that white men have ruined everything, because white men have created, you know, Western medicine. And is Western medicine great? No. But I firmly believe that, you know, using shame tactics and being at war with systems is never going to create anything except for burnout and disease in women's bodies. Mm-hmm. And learning to come into this deep appreciation of what men have created in this world is just so fucking necessary for our healing. So that took me a long, long time to unwind, because I've been at war with, you know, the medical system just in my practice of, and seeing what women's bodies have gone through. But it was really also a piece of taking responsibility. Like, so many women do not take responsibility for the fucking choices they make.
Dirty, dirty word you're using there.
Yeah, and how they choose to participate and pedestalize Western medicine and then feel traumatized by Western medicine. And you have to take the onus for your choices, you know, and so many women aren't willing to fucking do that.
And I want to pause, because you and I use similar language, which, again, another version of my love for you. But when, you know, when people who participate in the Oppression Olympics and Victim Olympics are hearing this right now, they have this idea that choice means that they were sat on a table, that they were presented with the conscious choices, like, hey, you can do this, you can do this. And they were like, well, I didn't have that, therefore I didn't have a choice, right? And I want to emphasize that that's not what choice is about. Choice clearly is not a moment where, you know, the time freezes and you get to, you know, you can determine, okay, what am I doing right now? Where am I going? How will this affect me? That's not choice. Choice is starts off as often a hindsight thing, right? Where you, like, start analyzing perhaps your current self and your current world, what you're not happy about or are happy about, and then you start looking back, like, okay, what led me to this? Where was the choice made? And I love alcoholics for this, because they know that, you know, the choice to drink never happens in that moment. Like, it happened way fucking before.
Yeah.
So the when we speak of choices, it's not like, you know, you were given your multiple questions and answers and choices and, like, you got to decide. No, it's like such a fine, intricate mechanism going on within you. And where people feel like, oh, no, I don't have a choice. They're constantly just reacting.
Bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. And people choose to not educate themselves. And it's like, you aren't making an informed choice, and that's on you. It's no one else's. People, especially in Canada, and this is one thing that I really fucking hate about Canada, is how reliant Canadians are on the government. You know, they expect their doctor to educate them. They expect their insurance company to pay for everything for them, to pay for all their healthcare services. And it's just created a society of wildly dependent children, right? That don't want to do their own self-education, that don't want to advocate for themselves. They're just like, take care of me, you know?
Yeah, most people, or too many people in the West, are infants stuck in an adult body, using
yes.
air quotes. Like, that's 100%. What it is.
Yeah.
As you, and you have to tell us more about that too. And again, we could talk for hours, so we have to do this more often, please. But as you say, like, the birth world puts you, like, there's a lot of, like, feminism around it, you know, anti-men. When was the first time that you noticed that after you participated and you were like, oh shit, we're going all wrong about this?
I'm gonna find this quote, because this was the first time that I was like, oh, this is, there's something here. Because I was surrounded by women who just wanted to smash and burn down the patriarchy, you know?
Oh, that phrase. I know. Used it too.
I fucking hate it.
Oh my God.
And I don't remember when I saw this quote, but it was quite a few years ago, like 4, maybe 5 years ago. And it's by Shanti Zimmerman, and she said, I do not want to smash the patriarchy. I want to be the open, clear, and gentle space where it can put down all its weapons and weep its generations of grief. And that just, like, that is truth, you know? And have men made poor decisions for our world? Absolutely. Have women made poor decisions for our world? Absolutely. And the only way things are going to change is when both fucking sides grow up and take responsibility for the choices that they've made. Because we've all participated in it. The majority of women want to smash the patriarchy are perpetuating the patriarchy more than men are now. And everyone wants to burn everyone else at the fucking cross for choices that our ancestors made, you know, and it's stupid. It's stupid, you know. We have to get over what happened in the past and move forward and take responsibility for our fucking lives to create change.
Oh, so good, so good. I'll put that quote, like, written in the description. For me, I remember the first time when I heard one of the coaches that I absolutely, business coach that I looked up to, say something along the lines of, when I was contemplating how to find a good partner, I asked myself, what type of person do I need to be in order to attract a partner? And I was appalled. I'm like, excuse me, I'm a fucking catch. You should bow down at my feet. What you mean? But it haunted me.
Totally.
That phrase. Yeah. Haunted me. Oh, and then I had to look around and see that all these angry feminists don't have marriages, or they have, like, castrated men. And I'm like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want that at all.
Totally. And that was a big piece for me as well. I really had to look at who I was as a woman. And, like, I'm in the process of writing a piece how being a radical feminist ruined my health. Absolutely destroyed my health. And I'm still learning to soften and learning how to truly be a fucking woman and let my man take care of me. It's not an overnight fucking process. But I wouldn't have the life I have right now if it wasn't for a good man. Period.
Do you... hey, doggy. Hey, doggo. How's your babies? Yes. Amen. 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 And what I'm curious with you in your process, do you feel that there was a part of you that first had to have that realization that softened up and then the partner came, or did the partner come for you first and then
the softening okay. happened before the partner showed up 100%,
because otherwise the partner would have never come.
No, never, 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 never. As long as I was stuck in my men are the fucking worst, men are the problem, they're, you know, horrible fucking pieces of shit, I never would have found a good man, ever. And, like, I got a good fucking man. Like, I've never met anyone with a heart like his, you know? And it's, yeah, old Carly never could have received that.
Ugh. Could you say, because you mentioned the phrase, and I'm still softening up, and I feel that, again, as all these pendulums keep going online, that we have now this extreme counter movement where femininity is extra, like servitude is submissiveness, in a too much of a Christian way,
yeah,
perhaps?
Yeah, I don't connect with that.
Right. So what does that look like for you, and what does that feel like, or what's the inner dialogue around that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really learning to, I've really had to learn how to let someone fully in and trust, and not, like, my exterior layers of myself are very barbed, very pokey, very sharp, because I've had to be very fucking on it to get to where I am today, and learning to let those barbs down and, like, just, like, let a man take care of me has been this whole unwinding and unlearning process for me without having to go into, like, I can't stand these women who are just, like, you know, in this ultra soft feminine place where they're like, oh, I don't even want to work. I just want to lay around and be fed grapes 24/7. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You're fucking lazy, you know? Right. And, yeah, I don't connect with that at all. So yeah, being able to trust a man and trust that there's, like, good men, and it's just been this ever evolving process, and being able to in one hand be like, men are so fucking good, and in the other hand be like, yeah, there are some shitty fucking men out there who really needs, you know, to be corrected in this life. It's like my ability to hold complexity and nuance has grown immensely in these last few years in this process of softening into myself, rather than being so radicalized and, you know, black and white in my viewing.
I love it. Oh, so good, so good. And now you must tell us about your practice and your pelvis and your vagina, vulva, everything, this whole body and reproduction system. You are leading. You are unique in the way you do it.
Yes. I mean, I sacrificed everything to get to the place that I am. Sacrificed, you know, relationship, fucking not a life, but my whole focus for 15 years was on developing my craft and educating myself, and that's all I did. All I did. And it was part of this, it's also been this part of unwinding that, like, insane drive that I have, and learning that I can just, like, go fishing with my man and enjoy life and not be, like, a psychopath, you know? And then there's also the side of it where this relationship that I've developed and this body of work that I've developed would be a bunch of bullshit if I wasn't actually softening into my system and learning how to receive a man, you know, and feeling him fully with my body and having this pussy, this vulva, this vagina, this pelvis that is softening in a way that I never imagined possible. So many women are living in bodies. So many women have no idea how good they could feel, period. They have no idea what their bodies are capable of doing, because we've all been fed this this patriarchal idea that it's a burden to be a woman in this world. It's a burden to bleed, that we don't need to go through the initiation of childbirth. We can just have babies pulled out of us, and we don't even have to be present. We don't have to go through the pain of birth. And this is another viewpoint that, you know, is at least in my world, in my manual therapy world, a lot of people don't agree with me on this, but pain is fucking necessary. And we are so coddled around our pain. Nobody wants to sit in their pain. And pain and pleasure are two sides of one coin. And if you are not willing to feel pain, you will not feel pleasure in this life, period. The more pain you're willing to go through, the more pleasure will be available to you. And we've given that away as women to this medical system that just wants to, you know, schedule C-sections and have everything fucking on a timeline and just keep everything neat and tidy. And it's really, women are robbing themselves of just so much immense beauty and power and sensation that they could be experiencing in their lives if they'd actually drop into their body and feel what's being held there, rather than being scared all the time.
And what's your, because this is your main teaching right now, yes. Right? The pelvic, what are some of the, because I see whenever you're going through a wave where the world is coming at you, right? Like when you're like, no, I like meat. Meat is good, right? Like that was a few weeks, few months ago, where you are very much like, no, meat is good.
Yeah.
And where do you feel that these, you know, the birth people, you would assume that the birth people are very much in touch with this. However, they're still just like just parroting these like phrase. I don't even know where they're coming from at this point.
Yeah, I mean, with the meat thing, veganism has just taken over our world, and it's really crazy. Like, I spent 2 years as a vegan, and it destroyed my hormonal health. You know, and like, I grew up on a farm, and like, I started butchered our own cows my whole life. Like, I remember being 7, 8 years old and my grandpa teaching me how to skin a cow and skin a steer, and like, this is like an inherent part of how I grew up, right? And so to go to being a vegan from that was just like, it was wild. And so many women have just, again, not done their due diligence, and we just buy into these ideas that are perpetuated and think that it's serving our bodies. And so many people are just hooked into this veganism idea that it is what is healthiest, that it is what is a good person does. It doesn't kill animals, you know, and it's a total lie. I don't get too much pushback on the veganism anymore, because I've been pretty hard on it. Like, I won't even work with vegans in my practice, because it's a waste of my time. The body does not hold change. The body absolutely requires cholesterol. Cholesterol does not exist in the plant world, so it's a waste of my time, and I don't waste my fucking time. My time is precious. Where did I want to go with that? I mean, it's not just the birth world. It's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere with this whole vegan thing. A big reason, I think, why women are really struggling with having the births that they want, with, you know, women's health is really in the fucking tanks these days. Fertility is fucking tanking. Endometriosis through the roof. PCOS is through the roof. You name it. Any kind of pelvic issues through the roof these days. And it's because women are fucking starving. They're malnourished immensely, because they think that living on green smoothies and salads and Starbucks is what is, you know, keeping them skinny and healthy. And most women who are skinny are fucking so unhealthy. So unhealthy. We have this, like, the body positivity world. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here.
Yes, please. I want that written down. Yes,
the body positivity world hasn't done anything for us. We think that being obese is healthy, and it's not. It's fucking horrible for us. But it's insane. It's absolutely fucking insane. But also, being women who are, the majority of women have no muscle on their bodies. And that is just as unhealthy as someone who is severely overweight. No muscle, period, means you are sick. Your body is severely unhealthy.
Well, and what I have been, and I'm a chunky monkey myself, right? I have, like,
press. We think that being obese is healthy, and it's not. It's fucking horrible for us. But okay, yeah, me too.
This fat ass, but I'm hauling all the hay bales, and I'm, you know, like, it's, well, you know, farm life. But I'm wondering where we went as a culture from me saying morbidly obese is unhealthy, and then the response being, well, skinny isn't healthy either. I'm not saying, but, like, that's the collective, like, the, I'm like, I'm not, they're not related. We can just conclude that, you know, the body positivity movement, who's all like, oh, you know, fatness is beautiful and it's all good, and you can't tell if a fat person is healthy from the outside. Yeah, motherfucker, I can literally tell.
You can tell. You can tell by looking at any human if they are fucking healthy or not. The majority of humans walking around today have gray fucking skin. You know, they fucking black eyes, gray, yellow skin. You can just feel they're, like, there's so much drag and no vitality in their systems. You know, if you see how someone picks up their fucking bag of groceries and they're struggling, that person is not healthy. If a person can't get their ass off the ground without using their hands, that
and
person,
and using all these moaning sounds,
totally. Yeah, it's just, I can't stand the body positivity movement. It's absolutely fucking insane what we have perpetuated and made people to believe that it's perfectly normal and perfectly okay to be severely unhealthy.
Did you see the morbidly obese conference? It's either in Canada or it's in America, but it's basically a conference, convention just for, like, morbidly obese people, and we were like, what the fuck y'all doing, just having buffets there, or, like, what are we doing? And I'm all for shaming, by the way, like, I know I'm not a good person, like, I think we need to bring some shame back instead of, like,
I mean,
having
it serves a purpose in correcting really bad behavior 100%. You know, yeah, I mean, I love constructive criticism when it's like, Carly, you're being a fucking idiot here and you need this, you need to self-correct. I mean, it serves purpose. It's like, thank you. Thank you for your fucking honesty. But most people don't want honesty these days. Majority of people want to be coddled in their comfortable bullshit, right? And, like, it's just wild to me. I've been sitting with, you know, starting to speak out. That's the one realm, the body positivity realm, that I have not dipped my toes into a little bit, because I know the lashback is going to be pretty heavy.
Yeah, right. And yeah. But it has taken you some time, but you have cultivated a following and people around you who not only maybe think the similar way, but are that seek out the challenge of their thinking.
Yeah.
How do you? Because I feel like we have quite a clear vision on America, but Canada was always somewhat, in my perspective as an outsider, like the softer version of America.
Oh, Canada's just as bad, as the States. Like, we're fucked here. We're totally fucked. Yeah.
And I just feel like Canada didn't have the extremes, like, you know, the freedom, you know, the guns we have here. Like, we didn't have these free, like, that's so America.
Yeah.
Specific. How do you feel that, whether it's America or Canada or as a collective, that we got stuck in a place where we can't even handle, whether it's criticism, different opinions, let alone punishment or discipline? Like, that's so far away now.
I mean, people have just given up all their fucking power for this idea that they're going to work till they're 65 and then the government's going to take care of them. And that mentality is so perpetuated. Like, I remember I was talking with this young girl in Saskatoon. She was like 20 and she was going to school to be a birth worker. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to go to school to be a midwife because I want to, like, she wanted to be an actual registered midwife and work for the medical system because she wanted to be putting into her pension, old age pension, so that she could retire one day and have an old age pension. And I was just like, are you fucking stupid? Why do you want that? Like, you are literally signing yourself up to be a fucking slave to the system. Like, you're 20, you have your whole life ahead of you, and all you're thinking about is your fucking pension? Give me a break, you know? Like, I don't understand people like that. It's like working your life away to fucking retire and then sit in a fucking chair, be in pain, being sick all day, and get this measly little check from the fucking government who knows if the way our world's going, if you're ever gonna get that fucking check. You know, like, you are literally signing your life over for nothing. It's insane.
Were you brought up to question Country Daddy?
Yes.
Or is that something that happened later? Okay.
No, my parents hate the government. So I'm super lucky in that way. My dad fucking hates the government. My dad's like, you know, old school farmer, hates them. And then my mom, I'm really lucky. My mom was a prostitute from...
My mom, too!
Nancy! yeah, my mom lived on the street from, like, 9 or 10 years old and was a prostitute from 13 to 20, 21 years old. And she always said that being a prostitute was, you know, it was fucking hard, obviously, but it was the best thing that ever happened to her because it kept her out of the system. It kept her out of school and being indoctrinated, which is all school is an indoctrinating children to be fucking slaves to our government. And it kept her out of that.
If I may inquire, do you plan on having children yourself?
I mean, if it happens, like, I truly believe that bringing children in is all soul contract work. It's not a right. Nobody has a right to it. We think it's our right, and it's a fucking privilege to bring a child onto this earth. And if I'm meant to, I will. If I'm not meant to, I won't.
I love that. Oh my God. I love it. What are you currently occupying yourself with? Like, you have your ongoing pelvic nectar, right? Which is it like a bi-monthly? That's kind of the introductionary.
It's the introduction to my work. It's a three-hour class where I teach women their full vulva-vaginal anatomy and then take them through a practice of touching all the different structures in their vulva and their vagina to get to know their tissue and feel the whatever sensations, whatever emotions are held in that tissue. So as long as women are afraid of touching themselves and their vulvas are stored with a whole host of experiences and emotions and, you know, even toxins, the amount of women's vulva tissue that is carrying toxins from the extremely toxic clothing that we wear is rampant. So as long as the tissue is holding on to all that, you know, true healing is not going to happen in the body. I teach that every single month, and I'm actually coming out with a new class that I'm hoping I'll probably teach it in April, a class for men. I get asked all the time on if there's anyone that I can recommend that teaches the way I teach about the body, and there just isn't. So I'm going to teach a male class. So men will get to learn about their anatomy, And the amount of men that have been circumcised, and men really don't, a lot of men don't realize the long-term consequences of circumcision scars, and how that's going to affect them long-term. And then the amount of men that also have adhesion and scar tissue in their testicles and how that's affecting their testosterone levels. So I'm going to teach a class incorporating their male anatomy, teaching them how to work with their own tissue, and then teaching them female anatomy so that they actually know how to touch a pussy. Because a lot of men don't. You know, they know fucking nothing about a woman's body. But a lot of men really want to know, but they just don't know where to go to get this information. So, yeah. I'm super excited about that class. It'll be really nice to work with men again.
So you mean to tell us that vaginas, from a female or a male perspective, are not just to put our vibrator on and get orgasms all the time?
No, definitely not. That's I get in a lot of trouble online when I talk about vibrators.
Yes, that's why I brought it up. I'm sorry, but we have to.
That's okay. Yeah. No, they're not. You know, I fully believe in our vulva and our vagina's power and ability to be an oracle for us in our lives. And the amount of women that do not listen to their bodies because they can't even fucking feel their bodies, right? And when we're using high-powered tools, when we require high-power sensation to even feel, you know, pleasure in our bodies, there's something fucking wrong there. If you can't place your own finger on your clit and feel pleasure there, you got work to do, period.
Yes. And you're changing the world. You're changing the world with Nectar. You're changing the world with your approach and with your voice. And again, what I love is your duality of, you know, running a business while, you know, living a very raw, real, rural life, and showing that too, right? Like, yeah. what is real life look like? Instead of driving through a Starbucks every day, get your high sugar rush. And don't get me wrong, I love a Starbucks.
Totally, of course.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah. Right.
Is there anything you want to specifically bring up or mention or talk about that we need to know or that makes everyone think?
I mean, we've gone in quite a few different directions here, but yeah, I mean, the more people drop into their bodies and wake up to what really fucking matters is, like, why I even do what I do, you know? Because we think that living this rat race life in the industrialized world is the American dream and the ticket, you know, and the answer to all our prayers, and it's not. And the more we can, like, come into relationship with our physiological design and serve what actually serves our physiology, waking up and watching the fucking sunrise, being out in nature, not being surrounded by cement and concrete buildings, you know, that's fucking killing everybody. And, like, I was just in Calgary for training for 5 days, and fuck, I feel like shit when I go back to cities. It is so anti-life, and we drank the fucking Kool-Aid of the Industrial Revolution fully, and it has not served, like, has it, you know, brought about amazing, you know, technology that, you know, is helpful? Sure, yeah, there are some benefits to it, but in the grand scheme of things, it's killing humanity.
Absolutely.
There's this really brilliant French obstetrician, Michel Odont, and I was listening to him on a podcast years and years ago, like 10 years ago, and what he said always stuck with me. He's like, French bulldogs, they cannot give birth vaginally anymore. Every single French bulldog has to have a C-section, and that is a sign of a species becoming extinct. And humans are heading in that trajectory fully. Our C-section rate is growing and growing and growing every fucking year. And we're, you know, as doomsday as it sounds, this is just the reality of it. If we don't make changes, humans are no more.
Absolutely.
Yep. And our city fucking lifestyle is perpetuating our extinction.
Yeah, absolutely. We're exchanging artificial excitement in high sugar, in high ease, in high comfort for the price of actual life.
Exactly. Yeah. And everybody thinks that, you know, that this life is meant to be easy. And that's not what this realm is about. This realm is about lessons and what it is to be a fucking human. And that doesn't come without pain and grief and fucking heartbreak.
Word. Oh, you, like, I have no idea where this... It's not even... It's like, I call it like recycled hippieism. I don't know what to call it, where people go like, well, you know, everything just needs to flow and in nature. Nature is fucking brutal. Have you seen a fucking antelope being ripped apart by a lion?
Exactly.
Brutal.
Yeah. This one woman that I really love and respect her, but she shared this news piece that I think it was about grizzly bears or polar bears that, you know, they were trying to push the whole climate change perspective and saying the climate is getting so bad that polar bears are now cannibals and they're eating other baby polar bears. And I'm like, that's just what they fucking do. Like, a grizzly bear lives, 40% of a grizzly bear's diet is baby black bears. They're not, cannibalism isn't some effect of climate change. Climate change is a bunch of fucking bullshit. It's created to control people. Like, it's just insane, you know? We want to soften and coddle and infantilize this, our world. Everybody wants to be treated like a fucking infant, and this is what we get for it.
There's this Brazilian commercial, I'll send it to you if you hadn't seen it, where, and it's set up in like a prank setting, where people go to a butcher and at the counter they go like, hey, what do you want? And they go like, I don't know, I want 2 pounds of pork chops or something. And for the prank, they pull out a baby piggy and put it in a machine, air quotes, and then they add like all these sounds like, ah, you know, like the piggy squealing, and then they give them the pork chops and the people go like, what did she just do? What kind of animal abuser are you? This is horrible. And I'm like, where? And even though, again, this was a prank, right? Because it was just to amplify, because the process takes significantly longer. It was like that people are so out of touch with not only, like, again, nature, climate, whatever, but where their food is coming from, that they have just like disassociated that their meat was an actual being.
Exactly. Yeah. It's wild.
Okay. So, ending up with the two traditional questions. If you would travel back to your 14-year-old self, what would you tell her?
It's so interesting. I just spent a whole weekend diving into, you know, working with my teenage self. And I would tell her I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with that being said, if your 58-year-old self would travel to you today, what would she tell you?
Good job.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Where can we find you? What can we do? I will link everything, obviously, in all the actual clickable memo notes. But tell us, where can we find you? What are we doing?
Yeah, the best place is Instagram for me right now. Carly Ray Beaudry is my handle, and yeah, I'm on Facebook too, Carly Ray. I think I'm just Carly Ray on Facebook, but those are also, you know, I'm always at the risk of losing my accounts, so we'll see how long I last.
You bad, bad woman with I know. Your wild opinions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Huh. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Everyone, if you're not following yet, if you're new to her, like, we've obviously surface touched on so many small topics today that require years. If we could go years into the depth of it. But enjoy Carly. Go follow her. Check out her stories. Check out the interactions and conversations she's having. Highly recommend. What a gift. What a gift your existence is. Carly, thank you so much.
Thank you, love.
And we'll see you next time.
Wait. Were you almost hanging up, leaving us, leaving me and everyone in this podcast without liking, subscribing, and putting on that bell notification? Nah, that's not cool. Come on, do it. And if you're feeling extra feisty today, share, tag me, and tell me what you like the most about the episode. Let's hear it in the comments. Let's hear it on all the platforms. I'll see you in the next episode.